Prologue, in the skies over France. Vladimir Putin closed his eyes, smiled, and zipped up his trousers.
Spasibo, Kat,
he whispered, thanking Yekaterina for her services. He had distrusted the woman at first, far too familiar right from the beginning, but over time she'd worked her magic on him, to the point that by now he felt he could not live without her.
What would I do without you?
He would find himself whispering into the perfect shell of her ear in the heat of passion. And in fact, he meant it. The former Miss Ukraine looked up at him from beneath long black lashes and smiled.
No, thank you, Excellency,
she said, playfully snatching the white linen handkerchief from his breast pocket of his suit. With a coy little smile, she delicately patted at her full red lips. Her confidence was not ill-founded. She'd long ago realized that not only did she have the president of Russia hooked, she had him in the boat. She had him filleted. She had him on ice. She had him sautéed. The president of Russia reclined his seat, put his head back, and closed his eyes. A few moments later, suddenly feeling tired, he motioned for Ekaterina to get to her feet and return to the galley.
Cup of tea, please, my dear,
he whispered, cracking one eye. The lapsing souchong.
My pleasure, Excellency, she said with a small bow,
before heading aft to brew his tea.
Sorry, Kat?
She paused, turned, and said,
yes. I suddenly feel so tired,
the president of Russia said. It was true. Lack of energy was never his problem. Could he possibly be getting sick?
No.
Not now, not possible.
No, Volodya. I think you just feel a little bit more relaxed, yes?
He laughed at her little giggle and the way she wiggled her hips and broad fanny while walking away. What was it about pleated skirts? Was it a Russian thing? Probably not. He and the American president, Donald Trump, had once addressed the pleated skirt issue at Davos. Trump had said he fully shared Putin's views on the subject of pleats when it came to skirts. In fact, the two men privately shared a great number of views. They didn't need any plastic reset button. They instinctively saw each other as equals, both strong and proud men, two willful leaders who put their own countries first, and rightly so. Putin knew he would never like many of the American president's actions, but he would understand the man's motivation, and vice versa. He willed himself to do as she said and relax. It was difficult. The explosive sounds of screeching brakes, high-speed collisions, and cacophony of heavy gunfire were still ringing in his ears. Less than an hour ago, en route to a hastily arranged secret rendezvous with Andre, his pilot, his convoy had been ambushed by successive carfuls of paid assassins firing heavy machine guns. And not once, mind you, but twice, on the deserted country road to his private airfield just north of Moscow. His tank-like state limousine, a cocoon of lead and steel, had roared through the field of fire each time, the limo's structural integrity intact despite the hail of bullets. He'd been well defended by the men in his convoy, of course, but still, it had been a very close thing. The oligarchs had made it clear that he had a target on his back and time was running out. And that's why he was getting the hell out of town, but with any luck at all, he'd be back in the ring shortly. His once unthinkable decision to vacate the Kremlin had been a long time coming, but after repeated assassination attempts by his enemies both within and without the Kremlin walls, read, treacherous oligarchs, he'd finally opted for this midnight getaway. He planned to disappear soon after planting rumors of a terminal cancer diagnosis. Fake his death. The good thing about being dead, he told Kat one night, aboard his yacht Tsar, was that no one was trying to kill you. And all this crap, courtesy of the fucking oligarchy. The very men he'd made rich beyond anyone's wildest dreams, men who had tens of billions upon tens of billions in gold. Gold, he knew from his private sources in international banking, that was now hidden away, deep inside vast caverns in the Swiss Alps. These bastards who'd turned on him in these last few years? They'd been methodically stealing the few gold reserves that he, Putin himself, still had left. This had been an extraordinarily rough year, even by his standards. The oligarchy, it finally became apparent to everyone in the Politburo, in the Federation government, was now wealthy enough, and thus powerful enough, to seize the reins of the Kremlin. Then, through powerful paid stooges loyal only to them, they could rule Russia in a way that suited only their interests. That's the future he was abdicating, a kleptocracy. He was leaving his people in the hands of a government of thieves. Plots conceived and executed by bands of roving criminal thugs, men now working for his betrayers. He had endured poisonings, threats of a coup d'etat, many assassination attempts, one that left him severely wounded, and hellish riots outside the Kremlin walls. Food riots that seemingly went on for weeks, the ruble dropping to historic lows, oil prices in the toilet, U.S. sanctions over the annexation of Crimea, and his recent actions in Syria, and very little money for food in the stores, hell, even very little for vodka, for Christ's sake. And that really was an economic crisis. Little water, as the alcoholic stable was called in Russia, was no luxury. It was simply indispensable in Russian society. Even his state media was openly daring to question his fitness to be president, saying that perhaps if Putin was gone, Russian citizens would fare better under the oligarchy leaders in the Kremlin. Christ! Well, it would be good to get away, disappear off the face of the earth, possibly fake his own death if the opportunity presented itself. As he joked on the phone with Andrei that day, at least when you're dead, people stop trying to kill you. He'd have time to do some serious thinking about his political future, and whether or not he had one. It was debatable, whichever way he chose to look at it. Now that his beloved motherland was almost flat broke, his once loyal base was now turning on him in droves. Sooner or later, unless he was able to come up with a massive injection of capital into the system, Russia would go the way of Venezuela, like the chaos now at the hands of that idiot bus driver, Maduro. He glanced at his new Patek Philippe watch. Nearly noon. They'd be touching down at Aeroport de Nice in 1 hour, and a quick hop in his chopper over to Cap d'Antibes, where his beloved yacht Tsar was moored. His wife was with her mother in Vladivostok for a month, so a brief respite of bliss lay ahead. He and Ekaterina would have the world, his safe private world, all to themselves without interruption. Tonight, at dinner aboard the yacht, he would give her the emerald and diamond necklace, the one he'd pocketed during a midnight visit to the Hermitage Museum last week, the necklace Catherine the Great had worn to the palace the night she... He must have dozed off. He opened his eyes and looked around. Everything was fuzzy. It was like waking up in the morning in a room you don't recognize. He was barely able to lift his arm. What the hell? Heart attack? He called out to Ekaterina. No response. When he swiveled his seat to see where she was, he saw both she and Irina slump forward in their seats, and the oxygen masks dangling over their heads. Were they incapacitated or dead? He looked up in horror at his own mask. Did he even have the strength to get the damn thing on? He reached up and yanked at the mask. Yes. Okay. Calm yourself, Volodya. Breathe. Breathe. A wave of panic swept over him, and he finally got the mask in place. There was no fucking oxygen flowing to suck down into his lung. No, of course not. It was just one more betrayal. Andrei, his trusted friend and pilot, had initiated a gradual depressurization of the cabin, was now withholding the oxygen supply. Enraged, he calmed himself and gathered his wits about him. He would need them, those pilots. He was dying of hypoxia. The president always traveled with his end-of-days backpack, that and an emergency parachute. The large black backpack was filled with cash, jewels, and weapons and drugs. survival clothing and a little dried food. Imperial vodka, a few books, and everything else. He keyed in the code for the lock, trying to shake off the dizziness that threatened to disable him. Clouds were forming at the perimeter of his vision, and he knew that he was rapidly running out of time. He grabbed his old KGB Makarov 9mm because it was loaded and its weight was reassuring in his hand. He staggered to his feet. For once in his life, he wished his Ilyushin II presidential aircraft wasn't so fucking huge. From his private resting area amidships, the cockpit looked a million miles away. He knew that if he ran, he would fall. A feeling of severe vertigo had gripped him. He walked, using both hands to hold on to anything solid. He knew the cockpit door would be closed, and he knew the traitorous two bastards inside had locked it. He'd only get one good kick, but he was a lifelong martial artist, a full black belt in judo, and he fucking well knew how to make his kicks count. The aluminum door flew inward, and he was inside, covering the pilot and co-pilot with a Makarov. "Andre, Andre, Andre," he whispered, putting the gun on the pilot. "You can't hurt that bastard. I gave you everything. Hands up. Turn around." "But I... please, sir, don't kill me. They said they would kill my wife and children. They left me no choice, but..." "It too, Andre," said Putin. The Makarov popped softly, creating a smoking bloody hole in Markov's forehead. He pitched forward against the controls, dead. Putin leaned down and snatched the bloodied, gore-filled oxygen mask from his late pilot's head. With a grimace of disgust, he fitted the disgusting device over his head, covering his nose and mouth. He inhaled hungrily, savoring the bite of the cold oxygen sucked into his starving lungs. He glared at his co-pilot, breathing deeply. He felt himself slowly coming back, his terrified mind settling back into some semblance of normalcy.
"And what am I to make of you?"
he said, now aiming at the terrified co-pilot.
"I don't even know your fucking name. Now listen carefully. Do exactly as I say and you may live another day. Descend and maintain 3,000 meters."
"Roger that, sir,"
he said, throttling back and easing the airship's nose downward.
"Descend and maintain 3,000.
The big four-engine Ilyushin quickly shed altitude.
"Reduce your airspeed to 200 kph.
"Reducing airspeed to 200 kph.
"Go to full autopilot. Lock it in."
"Engaging full auto and locked."
"Good work."
"Thank you, sir."
"No. Get on your feet, you nameless little fuck." "I said, on your feet now."
"But, sir, someone must fly the airplane. I cannot just..."
"Do as I say or die where you sit. Take off your oxygen mask and hand it to me."
The terrified and trembling man did as he was told, then unbuckled his safety harness and stood on legs that felt like jelly. Putin ripped off Andrei's bloody mask and replaced it with the co-pilot's.
"Please, sir, I have a young family. I didn't know what Karpov was planning until we were aloft, and I never would have..."
"Come back and warned me? Put your hands on your head and turn around. Don't move."
The doomed man did as he was told. Never once taking his eyes off his would-be assassin, he said,
"Bang, you're dead,"
and shot him in the back of the head, spattering the cockpit windows with strings of grizzle, gray matter, and gore. He lowered the gun, struggling for air. Something was wrong with the late co-pilot's mask. And then, inhaling deeply, sucking what little oxygen he could into his starving lungs, he had an overwhelming desire to lie down, curl up, and go to sleep right there on the cold metal cockpit floor. But two far more powerful desires dictated otherwise. The twin instinctive needs for survival and revenge. He left the two dead men on the bloody floor where they lay and staggered back to the wide fuselage door just aft of the galley on the port side of the aircraft. He cast his eyes to the back of the lounge just briefly. It was the last time he'd lay his eyes on his beloved cat. The bloody oligarchs had snatched her from him. they would pay. Shaking his head violently to maintain consciousness, he somehow disarmed the door, swung the big lever to the open position, kicked the door away, and stepped out into the dirty sherbet skies over France.